that if the divergence adjusted the places that you need to make the simple form to the same shape as the original one. Sometime, a good way to look at it is that this thing can be compensated by putting a term like this with a G squared. In the Lagrangian correction term, this can be put in by putting a term like that times some Q times some number. To the Lagrangian as a correction term, as a polytonic term. In other words, if we start out with the Lagrangian, instead of saying it was 1 over G naught squared, exactly, times that mu, we said we're going to start with the Lagrangian which has ready in it counter terms. It's this thing minus those numbers that you're going to find out what they want to be times F mu, which are counter terms. That's the Lagrangian we're going to start with. And then we're going to have a cutoff at lambda. And the cutoff at lambda is going to be equivalent to making corrections, divergences. Well, they're not divergent, because they're cutting along, which undo these and make something which is independent of the lambda. So by making the effect of the real G that we miss is equivalent to starting with 1 minus some constant. All that G problem. As I say, constant. Start with this term. Constants of some kind plus some counter term. Which could depend on magnitude, which will depend on that. And they're built in such a way as to compensate the divergences that we get here. So the net result when we're all finished is just that constant times that. Independent of the cutoff. And that's where all those formulas come from, that talk about 1 over G squared being corrected by things of the line. Right? Any other questions? Just another way of describing this. But the beauty of it is, it was just the fact that you pointed out, I should understand. The beauty is that the divergent terms are exactly the kind to reproduce the formula of the line. Therefore, by changing the coupling constant, we can undo the length of the distance. All right? Now, I do have to complete the discussion. Discuss higher order divergence. Before this, let's use this counter. I only did on this one the lowest order. I didn't do everything. I didn't do these groups. But let's suppose I had. Well, let's say this one. I don't care. But look, it doesn't make any difference. Quarks or gluons. I'm not going to worry about the geometry. We made a compensation for this. However, we just noticed when we were counting divergences that now we're in trouble because now after we did all that, then we look and we find something like this, and that table of calculations. Says that this will have the same divergence as this did. By the way, there was a step in here that was very clever. Taking this and putting it this way implies something about the higher orders, the leading models. What that is all about is that I have not only taken this diagram, but I've added this diagram. So I'm already together. And the sum of x squared, 1 plus 1 plus x squared plus x cubed plus x fourth is equivalent to 1 over 1 minus x. So when I did this, I was already predicting higher terms, but I know where they're coming from. Obviously, if I wrote that, see each one of these logs. I've done all the single loops. Now, so this looks as if it's going to produce another contribution to the log, and so on, and the millions of diagrams, but it's not true. I look at it this way. After I, every time from now on that I see a gluon propagating, I really should correct it. Could and correct it. Like putting a loop in there like so, or two loops or three loops in there. That's also one way. I want to include all those loops. So what this ought to be, this line now really means propagation compensated or corrected by this loops. Now we found out that, yes, I should emphasize that when I make this choice, substitute that back in here. My this thing is beta times the logarithm of lambda squared minus this logarithm gives the logarithm of q squared or lambda b squared, which is and therefore the effective propagation is not really 1 over q squared, but is 1 over but it's really 1 over q squared log q squared if single loops are included. That's like the more convergent. That goes down a little bit faster than q squared. So that these propagators are not, strictly speaking, 1 over q squared, they're 1 over q squared log q squared. By the way, we sometimes write that as alpha of q squared over q squared. Anyway, it's one over log. So these divergences are no longer computed right by just saying things like d4p or p to the fourth, the zero power, the leftover, which is equivalent, of course, to dp squared over p squared. But the propagators are not one over p squared, they have logs in them. And depending on how many there are, the lowest possibility is that it begins with log p squared and log. There are terms that you might have higher powers of log, but they have only single power of log. And there are terms that have that. But not worse, you have at least a log. But you see what this looks like. This is differential log over log. This is log log. Less divergence. So if I integrate this to some high frequency, this is still divergent, but it's log log. So when I go to the next order, I'm going to get log log. Of course, there can be terms with log squared here, but those will be convergent. Of course, it's going to be d log over log squared, which is 1 over log, which will be convergent. In other words, this integral just doesn't quite converge. But if I have more logs, it never converges. It doesn't. So that there are little log-log terms come in, no worse. So the next order terms, when you include the corrections in them from the lower order, does not produce the same divergence as before, but it produces only that. You might say, well, how do I know that there are any of the order terms out there? Maybe they're only log squares or log cubes. So that's the beta 1 term that we've been talking about.
Why did you have just two powers of movement to get greater than an integral?
Well, it's a logarithmic divergence. I don't care what I use. dp over q. dp q or d4p over q. Just to understand the log. I notice that there's another log around here. The logarithmic divergence turns not into a log divergence, but a log log. Right? That's not important to match me. P over P times 2 would be the same description. But differential log over log is log log. That's the thing. Now, you say, well, how does it go on to the third? But it's no longer true that it goes on to the next one. P because the higher ones give more powers of law down here. And more powers of law down here than you can purchase in its slums. Thank God. Now you say, well, it wasn't really log p squared. It was that plus log squared. And I'll let you get the argument that this doesn't change the divergence any way. It doesn't make it converge any better. It doesn't make it too. So that I don't have to put this exactly.
It's right. It's harder to think starting to get it all the way along.
Because next order, like this, dp squared over p squared, log p squared, squared. There's no way to isolate log. This correction is this propagator is corrected by 1/log. It's got a log in it, it's additional. In other words, the correction is a beta log plus beta 1 log. So, the correct thing to put ever, if it's anything, is log of p squared plus log of p squared at that order. But that argument, that doesn't make any difference compared to the log of p squared. What happens in the higher one is you get more logs down here. When you get this to a higher power, these don't do anything. There's no way to isolate this thing. It's not a multiplier. Some, it's a little older or something in which the guy is using some old-fashioned language. Now, nevertheless, you really understand the subject of freedom. What I've described, I have tried to do differently than is general in every textbook. In some textbooks, you don't say it's original, not at all. The contrary, myself. So, but I have to tell you about what I consider a kind of mistake, okay, which is very prevalent and is all over the place. It's not the way I'm trying to explain it. Now, the way I'm trying to explain it is that the coupling causes that when you make a cutoff, you change the theory. And the answers in general appear to depend on the cutoff. But it turns out they depend on two things. The way you cut it off, that is the lambda, and also the coupling cluster that you put in. But by a very wonderful situation we have, well, to be normalization, that when you adjust the coupling cluster correctly, when you change the cutoff, you change the coupling cluster, you'll get the same predictions in the long range. Physics, where the experts I've that idea. And that's what I wrote in the beginning, was a formula for how you have to take the cutoff in order to the results of the dependent any constant will do. Make the results independent of the cutoff. If you change the cutoff, you better change by this formula. Now, and that's this is a idea. Next. It turned out that in many circumstances where we could expect the mass of the quarks to be unimportant, don't forget that condition. Masses are not important in the definition of processes. And for such processes, the behavior of the process would be worked out as a perturbation theory in the gene. But that the coefficients of the of that would depend upon the logarithm, its coefficients. Depend on the logarithm of the cutoff and the momentum of the operation of the process, some momentum associated with the process, some definition of the momentum. Then this sum, these logs could be summed so that this was written in the form of alpha function of q squared plus 8-1 alpha of q squared and so on, and this is the sum physical process. In other words, for some physical process, and calculations would go like this, for a different process, all the coefficients would be different. There might be a pi here, by the way. Let's put one in here. And then we can see one being one. Anyhow, it would go like this, and it would be. So, therefore, when you start to work perturbation theory, there's a rule just substitute alpha g, which will work at least in the first order. It won't work in the second order, because you get the log, but you already eaten that, you get a substitution. So, this is the way I explained it, and it's perfectly okay. And the formula for alpha was definite, described, mathematical thing that's connected to the formula for this, which we wrote down as time. I'm just repeating, this is a confusing thing I found out by talking to someone who understood an account, reading too much stuff. It's really mixed up, or rather, not the best way to do it. Now, let me tell you the wrong way, what I consider. Not as good a way. It's a way that you could have done it, but it's got annoyances in it. It works like this. They start out with the farm. An alpha. Now, in order to make sure that this alpha is not exactly the same as that alpha, I'm going to put an underline on it so you'll always know which one I'm talking about. They'll define an alpha of Q squared by a physical process. I'll give two examples, possible definitions. For instance, we recalculate the scattering of two balls. We're all ordered. Exact. All the orders exact is going to be written as this super duper alpha over Q squared, and that's going to define alpha. There would be no such thing as finding a power series expansion of the coefficient, which is what I would do there. It would simply be that's alpha by definition for all orders. Another thing would be, another way, for example, was when we talked about P plus E minus the hadrons, a ratio. And remember that the formula for that ratio in the first order perturbation theory is 1 plus alpha over pi. Remember that? Or rather, yes, 1 plus g squared over pi. I'm not worried about the 4 pi's between the definition of alpha, which is squared. That's of the S that I can't remember. Let me define alpha. Q squared. This is another definition. Let's put two lines. It's another definition. It's identically equal to pi times r minus 1. R is the ratio of this reaction to hadrons over the cross section. Anyway, when you do this to all orders, this is defined all orders. There is no such a thing as a perturbation expansion because this is the first order, the next order, the next order. It's just the definition, right? That would be a possibility because it turns out that up to the first two orders, the formula for this alpha, the formula for that alpha, and my formula will agree in terms of the first log and the log log. If all those formulas satisfy, all of these formulas, my formula satisfy the 1 over alpha. Well, let's put something like this. The alpha log over the square, maybe log alpha square. And then I had 1 minus beta, 1 over beta naught squared. Well, but the more general one we show, should put on this side of my book, on this side of my book, that for every one of these definitions, for any one of these alpha bar things, that the alpha bar relative to q squared and log q squared satisfies exactly the same equation. Up to the fourth order. Yeah, this is square. Up to the fourth order, but the next order depends on the process. These don't. In other words, depends on the process needed to define. Beta, not using another beta, because of the difference in process. say, so what's any better? Why not use a definite process? You just have to calculate that definite process. Instead of using a definite process, I use a definite series, which this one was beta 1 squared, beta 1, so on. So that according to me, this equation, you can find out what it is by this one. This is expanded out as beta naught out. Notice this is a special choice. But it's definite. And this false standard type is independent process. And the advantage is you don't have to compute the special process out of those. You've got it done. Wait, you just define it. If you want to know some physics, then you have to compute. And that's stated in saying that you should really calculate the power series for this process. In terms of alpha, my alpha, not my standard, but something the other way. We should naturally expect to do each process separately as a perturbation expansion, instead of arbitrarily choosing one to define the quantity. Because one is no better than the other. And it leads to all kinds of confusion because everybody has a different choice. That's an example of human design's problem. They then said that the physical coupling constant, the defined coupling constant, depends on Q squared. But there's no definition. It depends on how you define it. You could say the coupling constant depends on Q squared, but what is the coupling constant? So people talk about this as if it's a running coupling constant, but you can't put that into the Lagrangian as a running coupling constant. The only thing you put into the Lagrangian is something that depends on lambda, not on Q. So it's rather confused. Scattering wall, we have less than four dimensions. We have something like 1 over g squared times the integral of f u to the L. And in integrate with respect to d dimensions of space-time, d is 4. Now that means, then what about the dimensions? And that mu, which you all know, and must be written for some reason, there's the combination of dA and A. That means that A is an inverse of A or an image. And that's the independent dimensions. And that F mu is an energy squared. And F mu squared is an energy to the fourth, in this dimension. Is a length as an inverse energy. So this quantity would have dimensions of energy to the 4 minus d. Therefore, g squared is not dimensionless. G squared has dimension. Energy to the 4 minus d. So you need one way is to just say, all right, I know that. Another way is to write g, write 2, as some other constant, something like that, times some particular length to the 4 minus d. I'm going to call that epsilon. 4 minus d, we're going to, in dimensional analysis, we're going to let the many dimensions get close. So we're going to have to have the g squared to look like that. But it doesn't make much difference. Now what happens is, if you do perturbation theory, g squared plus g to the 4 times an integral is in some way. Same way as you do before. Except those integrals, because they don't have the 4 in the integral, they only have the d dimension. Are less divergent. In fact, they converge. So you can actually do the integral, and there's no problem, and you find that the integral varies as q to the minus epsilon. It's minus epsilon because it's d minus 4. D is the d4p, not d4p, dq, because it's 4. So you get this kind of a term, and you keep that thing up. Here. There's no problem, everything converges and it's fine. But as we vary epsilon, we discover that the coefficient that we actually get, the coefficient in here, is a certain constant. You see, times 2 actually, in a way, over epsilon. That is, if I did the calculus in the different epsilons, I get something that varies epsilon this way. The coefficient diverges as epsilon goes to 0. I can go through all this usual stuff and rearrange the sum and doing that. And q is very large, this is small. But the point is that aside from constants which can be taken out, p divided minus one over the answer. One over. Q, which I have to sign by. And this all turns into, in the limit, beta naught, times the logarithm of q squared, well, and the square, well, that's good on q squared. The 2 is to change the q and lambda to q squared and lambda squared. The point is, the theory is convergent. It depends on epsilon, but has a very high coefficient as epsilon goes to 0. And in the limit, produces logarithm. Just like the logarithm we see, and we have to adjust the coupling constant. So it has the right behavior with epsilon. The other thing has to do. We again have the same problem. How does this g depend on epsilon?
Right? Yeah, it doesn't mean it's a dimensional regularization. You don't think lambda to be infinity. You think it to be close to the energy scale of
the. Take it to be lambda b, if you want. In the end, yes, it's better to. Yes, I think that's the right way. Excuse me. See, I have read that. I made an error. Thank you. Let's do that. Let's okay. Let me read that. Lambda p, which is that's the effect of that result. And so what we're saying is that the coupling constant has the dimensions of the physical energies we're interested in, which we keep at the same place as we vary the dimension. But it turns out that the strength of it should vary inversely as epsilon in order to get answers to an infinite. Thank you. We're getting proof of each other. Correct.